Welcome to episode 43 of the Just Keep Spinning podcast. My name is Andrea and I'm here with...
I'm Andrew.
And we actually don't have a guest today, but it's okay because like Andrew posted, if you follow us on our Instagram at Just Keep Spinning podcast, you'll see that we're getting back in the saddle again. So, which kind of goes with the theme a little bit on what this episode's going to touch on. So let's go ahead really quick. And again, I wanted to say our Instagram is Just Keep Spinning podcast. If you want to email to say you love us, you hate us, you want to send us musical suggestions, guest suggestions, you want to be on the podcast, you want to submit your music, you email us at justkeepspinningpodcast@gmail.com. And I'm going to highlight a few events here really quick. The first event I want to highlight is going to be this Friday, the 31st, Loose Joints, which we have talked about multiple times on here. Is going to have their annual monthly party down at Valley Bar, and it's going to be actually Party with a Purpose, so that's why it's on Friday, not Saturday. So there's going to be a $3 suggested donation at the door, and it'll go towards a very good cause. And of course, it's going to have the two resident DJs, Santos and Coco, and the guest this month is going to be Scotty O, which, have we seen Scotty O before?
I feel like we have, but maybe not.
Yeah, so it's going to always be a good time. You know, if you can't figure out what you want to do on Friday, that's definitely a good spot to hit up if you just want to have some good vibes going all around you. And another thing going on, actually, on that same day, Friday, May 31st, our friend, not just of the podcast, but I would say he's our actual friend, DJ My God Complex, also known as Ken. He's going to be having... so. He has this thing going on now down at the Nile in Mesa. It's a BYOV, so bring your own vinyl. It's open turntables, and it's going to be from 6 to 9 p.m., 21 plus. It's not 21 plus. It's actually all ages, I believe, but you can access the bar with an ID, and it's free. Doesn't cost anything to get in, and the address for the Nile is 105 West Main Street in Mesa. So his special guests, I don't know if he's going to have a guest every month. Andrew might be able to touch a little bit more on that, but it looks like he kind of has like a special guest this month, and it's going to be Blanquita Applebaum. So I have actually not met her, but Ken has very many good things to say about her. So I'm really going to try to make it a point to make it out to that. That way I can connect with her and just talk. And like I said, just connect with people.
I believe she is the other host on the show. I believe that she does something with the Nile. I'm not completely sure. But yeah, she's involved with everything that Ken does with the Nile. I follow her on Instagram. That's how, the only reason why I know. Like, he was always tagging her and stuff like that. So I don't know if she has... Is she directly, like, related to Ken with... like, it means, to, like, doing everything with the Nile, or she does with everything at the Nile. But she's obviously involved with the Nile.
Yeah,
like, she's... As in, like, with the events that go on there. Sorry.
Yeah, so, which is really cool. Like I said, always connecting with people in the community. And since we're always trying to kind of, like... It's like we have a blindfold on and we're putting our hand out there in the East Valley. I'm trying to figure out what else is going on out there. So we're always trying to remain in touch, not just be self-centered on what's going on in like Central or West Phoenix, but also on the Eastern and Southern parts of town. So
cool.
And really quick, I know that we always, at the beginning and the end of every episode, we always give our email. But what was interesting was one day, which was not that long ago, it was like a few days ago, we had a little notification, because we get notifications in our email, but we actually got some listener email, right, Andrew?
Yes, we did. We were super excited to actually hear from one of you guys out there in the pod, you know, in this, well, I can't say podcast world, it's because we're podcasters, so we're in the podcast world, and they're listeners, so you guys out there in the listener world, I suppose. It was, yeah, it was really, really nice to hear, like, from somebody.
Yeah, because we do get DMs and stuff, and we know a lot of the people that we've, I don't want to say a lot, but, you know, some of the people that we've had featured on the podcast, they've actually, they're listeners, but we do have subscribers, and I... which is a pretty decent amount, I would say, but I have no clue who most of the people are. So I'll just read portions of the email, just because I don't want to, I'm not sure if this person wants to like reveal their identity or anything like that, but basically they just said, "Hi Andre and Andrew, I wanted to express my excitement and joy in listening to you guys any opportunity I get. You two have done a great job showcasing Arizona's record scene and even highlighting shops and events that I wasn't even aware of. I've put off writing you because I didn't want to sound like a fanboy, which is silly because I don't think that they sound like that at all. What do you think, Andrew?
No, I don't think that at all. I think that it just shows that it actually shows that like all of the work we do is appreciated by somebody.
But I have to admit that I first came across your podcast a little over a month ago on Reddit, of all places. A Redditor mentioned your show in R Phoenix, and I've been hooked ever since. So basically, in the email, they just talk about how they were collecting, and they are from the West Valley, which I thought was really interesting, since a lot of people say that there's never anything or, you know, going on over here. So I thought that was really cool that they were from the West Side. And it says, it amazes me every time you bring up my Vadio and my old hangouts and trip out whenever you speak of places only I thought were my best kept secret. I still remember driving all the way to Thrifty Joe's on my time off between class at ASU West. For the longest time, I believed it to be my little dark corner until I bumped into a guy from Revolver. It was that point I realized Thrifty Joe's wasn't a secret anymore. One of my best scores there was a James Brown record that soon warped in my car when I returned to class. Lesson learned, I guess. Yes, we've all, I think, learned that lesson.
Yes, we have. Especially like on records that I think we bought it on Record Store Day, about one, and it like slid under the seat, and then a couple days later we found it and it was in the middle of summer and it was like completely bowl warped. I'm pretty sure we might be able to get it fixed still.
Yeah, we've been saying that for like a year, but yeah.
Yeah, we still haven't done it. So maybe someday we'll do it.
And the email continues, you're correct when you say that this side of the valley is in desperate need of a record store. I know I am. I still remember my first record, The Best of Little Anthony and the Imperials, that I purchased at Memory Lane Record Shop in Tempe. This was back in the early 2000s when the only places to go were Tracks and Wax, Stinkweeds, and Eastside Records on University. I've since slowed down a bit as I've graduated, got married, and have a little girl that loves to pull out my records across the floor from time to time. Your podcast has reignited my interest in all things vinyl and hope to visit the newer shops that have sprung up since. Keep up the good work and keep on spinning. Which, that's pretty much the gist of the email. Like I said, I omitted some parts that I felt like were identifying information for the person because I'm not sure how comfortable they felt. But I do want to definitely thank them and tell them, you know, that we're so grateful for you for reaching out to us. And we're glad that the podcast, you know, that it seems like with some of the feedback that we get, especially from someone that we don't have a personal connection to, that they have discovered new things, whether it's an event or a new DJ or new shops that are coming up, that, you know, because that's the point of the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. It's supposed to showcase what Phoenix has to offer, not only with records, but with music in general, artists, local businesses, anything that we feel contributes to music, culturally, to music and or records, because we're obviously, just keep spinning, we're a record podcast, but music is the root of everything. So if we feel, you know, to us, I guess you can say, if we feel that you guys, if someone's contributing somehow in some way to the community, we really want to highlight it and at least give it a shout out.
Yeah, so like we said again, thank you so much for reaching out to us. That means so much to us, especially because we've obviously been on hiatus here for a bit here and there, because as we said on the previous episode, we've had a lot going on personally, and you know, it's, the podcast has been there in the back of our minds where we know we need to pick it up again and get it going, and it's kind of like hard because it's such a consistent thing in our life. So for us to not be doing it is a little weird.
Yeah. I mean, to be completely honest, we did record something and it just wasn't.
It was trash.
Yeah, it was complete garbage. And just, we recorded it last week and it just wasn't what we weren't happy about it. At the end of it, we just looked at each other and we're like, we're not releasing that shit. It's garbage.
Not that what we're doing here is like gold, like the golden standard of like podcasting or anything. That's not what we're saying. But we just felt like we just didn't feel comfortable. And it's like, why would we release something like that, especially with us having been away for so long, in a consistent way for you guys to listen to, when I wouldn't even want to listen to it myself. So,
yeah. So, but yeah, like we said, we're back. And hopefully at least every 2 weeks, but we're going to strive for every week, back to just our normal every week and getting our guests lined up. We have guests lined up that we just kind of, you know, haven't Like,
haven't been able to schedule in because of stuff that we have going on. But like we always say with our guests too, we know that everyone has their actual lives that they have to tend to, and so do we. But I guess back to regularly scheduled programming, right?
Yeah, I agree.
So, Andrew, have you had any pickups lately?
So again, it's been a while. So we went to actually dig a couple weeks ago, it was now. We went digging, like actual digging, not just like, you know, recent arrivals digging like we have in the past. So it was pretty nice getting down and dirty and getting dusty and going through those dollar records. I personally really didn't find anything. We found a couple things, but not much. But it was nice going through and like seeing what they had to offer. But we got a few things.
Yeah, we dug and got some more newer stuff since that was one of our New Year's resolutions, wasn't it? To kind of get on the ball and like I start buying like more current stuff, not just stuff that are classics or stuff that we really want, because we do have our residency at Ground Control. So it's kind of an open format and we get to play all sorts of things there. So we kind of want to keep it as open-minded as possible when we play there.
Yeah, we always get positive feedback, especially at the end of the night. Like, I guess that's the rock hour, as like some people like to have. And we usually pay more heavier things and people really, really enjoy it. And so we've been actually purchasing a lot more of that, more classical stuff, and just people do suggestions. But, you know,
did you say classical? What do you mean, like
stuff? Not like classical music, but like classic rock. Not classic rock either.
Beethoven and Bach.
Yes, we only play that. Dude, that's because that is the hardest fucking rock ever.
You know, those are rebels.
With those powdered wigs.
Wow.
But we picked up a few more things. Just shit that we don't have in our collection that we're like, oh, we can wait on that. Let's just get this stack of like dollar records for that one expensive record. So we're, you know, slowly but surely buying the more, I guess you can say, expensive records.
You mean like current, more expensive stuff that's come out? Yeah.
Instead of like, you know, $2 to $3 records that we always seem to come across that are like great deals and that are just, you know, staples to have.
Yeah, and another place that I actually went to on my own, I took some time off work because I was like, I need a break and I need to have some time to myself. And I went and drove to Phoenix and was at the InGroove and I spent some time there. And of course, like we said before, they have some fire dollar bins there at the InGroove. And I think the guy, the owner of the store, knows that. Like, he doesn't mind because he's a pretty... how do I say it? He's educated. He's been in the game in a long time. He's not brand new to the business. So he knows what's in there. But you can find some really good, like, standard things in those dollar bins. So all dollar bins are always good to look through, or the cheaper bins. But those ones at the InGroove in particular always have something that either I don't have or something that I wanted to get before, but I always see it. But I'm like, oh, you know, it's always like $5 to $10. And at the InGroove, I can find it sometimes for $1. And his stuff's usually pretty clean. Obviously, like at the InGroove, the stuff that are actually above, those ones are typically the ones that are like in the Japanese wrap sleeves and they've been fully cleaned and everything. And the stuff that's at the bottom in the dollar, he doesn't have them in the sleeves. And I don't know if he cleans them as much, but they're all still, like I said, in pretty great condition. And you can find really good stuff in there. So I recommend, you know, if you're looking for something that you haven't really wanted to pull the trigger on, that's usually not like a break the bank record. You never know what you're going to find in there. I found some stuff in there and I got a few other things. I don't remember exactly what they were, but it was cool. It's always a nice vibe there in the InGroove. So shout out to the InGroove for having some good stuff in there.
Yeah, eventually we'll have Mike on.
Yeah, we're working on that. And we actually... We did a few things since the last time we've had the last episode. Andrew actually played an event for an artist.
Yes. Lover's Lane was what the event was called. It was like a love story into like Chicano culture or a Chicano love story, or one of those two. So I just went and played some soul music with a couple of other collectors, and it was a really nice event. It was busy, and it was just, you know, the community really came out and supported it, and it was just everything you would have wanted from an event. And like I was really, really happy. Dre was there obviously supporting me, which I really appreciate. And But yeah, so unfortunately, we weren't able to plug it on here because it was kind of last minute that we got the green light to go. And
who did you play with?
I played with Milky Lokes, Jesse, who we interviewed on this podcast, and Mr. Doo-Wop Soul, Bosco, who we have not interviewed, who we eventually will get interview, who has been a collector for years. And so he will be hopefully next month will be on the podcast.
So did you see, I guess, that the turnout, I was talking to some people today, the turnout for the event over the weekend in Tucson, the Santana Soul event, was actually really good. They said it was a good vibe, that good people showed up, and I guess that they're planning to come out again to Arizona. So I don't know if they're going to come to Phoenix. For those of you out there that are into like the 45s and Soul and all the other stuff, that would be more into that lane. So if they do come out again, we'll keep you guys posted and plugged in so that everybody knows about the event, because that one we're for sure going to try to make. We just couldn't make this last one.
Yeah, for sure. We're kind of bummed out we missed it, but you know, just like we had said about the podcast, you know, we, our real lives come first and our family. So, but you know, we're actively trying not to miss these events as well.
Another event that we didn't play at, and I just want to hold on, let me back up here really quick. So it was nice for me to go to that Lover's Lane event, because usually I probably play out a little bit more than Andrew. And this time it was like the opposite, where I got to go an event to he was playing at. So it was nice. I felt all happy going there, and he did an awesome job, I'll say that. And so did Jesse and Bosco. They did really good jobs. And the exhibit was really interactive. So I think that was kind of what kept people sticking around a little bit longer too. It wasn't like the pieces were just displayed. It was the whole thing where basically on one side it was the women and the other side it was the men, and they, you got a card, and I don't know who did the printing, but that was really good.
Yeah, it was really like high-end printing.
Mm-hmm. It was all glossy and nice and stuff. But basically, they gave you the Sharpie and you had to match and guess. Basically, it's called Guess Her Vato. So you had to match basically the man to the woman that you think that he was with. You know, Lover's Lane, the exhibit. It was a beautiful exhibit, and it was at Movida Gallery. I don't know if Andrew had mentioned that. So hopefully they host other things in the future like that, that we can make it out to, because it was really fun. And another event, like I said, that we had went to was actually Dayla's birthday party, which was a musical pleasure for the masses night. And it was a super cool, relaxed time. There were so many guest DJs. It was so awesome. And it was funny. Coco had made a remark to Andrew about the crowd that was there that night.
Yeah, it was towards the end of the night. And he's all, man, this is like a private listening party for just the heads.
Yeah, all the heads are up in here. He's all dancing.
And it was just a really, really good party. And it was, you know, obviously everyone came out for Dayla birthday, so you know, shout out to her.
Happy it's still technically May, Dayla, so it's still your birthday month. So happy birthday to you. And the last event I guess we'll talk about really quick here is that we played the Not Comic-Con Zia Records pop-up shop. So it's called Fan Fusion now. I guess there's like some trademark or copyright on who can use the actual words Comic-Con, which are San Diego, New York. So I don't know about all that drama or controversy, but basically we played the Not Comic-Con, the Phoenix Not Comic-Con for the Zia Records pop-up shop. And, you know, we've been to the pop-up shops that other, you know, like little pop-up shop record shows, not just that Zia has put on, but other places as well. And I was like shocked, because this wasn't just like a pop-up shop. It was an actual store in the Arizona Center. It kind of blew my mind with how much work that they put in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, it was a really, really cool store. They had employees there. Just their normal, you know, just other employees that work at the normal stores. They were there, you know, doing it. And, you know, it was the night we went, it was kind of slow, unfortunately. But, you know, we were there playing and enjoying ourselves. The employees enjoyed the music. I hope some of the patrons we did have come through enjoyed the music as well. But I thought the pop-up shop was a huge success. And from what I hear, it was also a really good success.
Yeah, so you, like I said, I was just kind of taken back because it was an actual store. So like one side was the store and that was sectioned off, and there was like bathrooms. And then they had like the stage where if you were performing, whether you're like a track selector or DJ or you're a band, like you would be up there. And then there was like a part for a bar, because it was in a collab with Film Bar and Rebel Lounge. So it was a really cool vibe. I don't know. It seemed like, you know, a lot of people had gone through there over the weekend, and they had a lot of other cool acts and podcasts and stuff like that. So that was cool of Zia to do that. And I'm excited to see what other pop-ups they potentially might do throughout the year. I don't know. Like I said, we don't know anything. They're just like, will ask us sometimes to, which we're so thankful and grateful for, to play certain things. We're like, sure. So it's not like we're really privy to any information. No one else is. We don't know either. We're just, you know, regular people here. But I look forward to future pop-ups, to visiting them and digging around, because I did find, that was my pickup. So there was this record that I had been lusting after, and I didn't know anything about it. It was a Japanese record. That's all I knew. And it looked like it was older, from the 60s, due to the styling of the clothes on there. And I had seen it, I don't know, I think you said, which Zia did we see at first?
T-Bird.
Yeah, it was Zia Thunderbird. And I'd always be like, oh, what do you think that sounds like? And I'm just like, you know, I mean, really, how can I know? It's just a jacket cover. There's no clues.
It's all in Japanese.
It's all in Japanese. So anyhow, I'm really fond of, like, a lot of Japanese, like, cover songs or, like, older Japanese stuff. It's just super cool. I feel like it's really soulful. So anyhow, I didn't know, and I'm like, but is it? I'm like, it looks like older, but is it more of like one of those, like, it's a throwback, like it's supposed to look older? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
So anyhow, I seen it there at the pop up for the Fan Fusion or whatever the heck it's called, and I had seen it at, I think, because they removed it. I think they might have taken it from Thunderbird, because I've seen it at a few pop ups, and finally I just asked them. I'm like, hey, you know, is there any way, do you guys know anything about this record? And so they actually ended up opening it and playing it for me. And I heard like the first beginning of the first song, and I'm like, I don't need to listen to this anymore, because it was fire. And I bought it. So I didn't listen to the rest of the record. And it was a gamble of me buying it, because it could have been like, it has that one fire song and the rest of it is God knows what. So I brought it home. I played that thing in full. And man, let me tell you, I'm so happy that I didn't pass on it, and I'm so grateful that I found that freaking record. So thank you, Zia. It's like it was just waiting for me there, because I'm cheap, and unlike Andrew, I try to stick to my resolutions. You know, I've been buying new records.
I've been really good.
He actually has the past few weeks. So when we went digging around, though, it actually felt good, because we hadn't been digging out in a while, which sometimes it makes me feel kind of disconnected. I don't know about you, but it does for me. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, it does, because especially because we have a podcast about music and records, and then you're not out there digging. You're just like, oh, well, you know, what is everybody else doing out there? It's just like what Rudy always says to us. I don't know what's in there. What if there's something in there and I've been looking for it and it's there waiting for me and I just need to go in there and find it? And that's how I feel about a lot of records when we go digging. Like, I don't know what's in this, you know, thousands of freaking dollar records, but there might be one record in there. It may not be super valuable, but it may be something that I really like.
Yeah, you might have a stack of El Martinos, but in the middle of all that, or at the very end, or somewhere random, there's going to be something. Because there's times where we've just walked in random places and we're just like, oh, do they have records here? They do, and we find something pretty freaking amazing. That's happened to me quite a few times.
What's the other one? Humperdick?
Humperdick, Engelbert Humperdick.
Humperdick.
I'm so bad about pronouncing that.
No, it's Humperdick. That's what I call it.
No. But because honestly, like, I've been feeling a little weird, a little down lately. Just have had a lot going on, and going out digging, it makes me happy. It's like one of my happy places. Like on Happy Gilmore, when Chubbs tells, you know, Happy to go to his happy place, and not the part where what's his name, Shooter McGavin, ruins it.
He kisses the kiss mask.
Oh, that's so awful with the grandma.
Yes, if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't seen the movie, then just Google Happy Gilmore kiss mask.
Yeah, so but that's when it would be one of my happy places, is in the record stores. I just like digging around, and I like digging. I hate just going somewhere and like looking like superficially. I love like that whole like the hunt and the dig of it all. Like that's part of the thrill, I guess you can say, for me in some weird way. So went around digging, and I know I'm going to be consistent and dig around more, even though, you know, you don't have to break the bank. Like I said, you can go into places and get creative and find places where they have records for sale that maybe you typically wouldn't think, and you can find really good stuff there at a decent price. And Andrew, so how do you feel about these new Techniques turntables?
It's just, it's funny is that we just got a message from something. I'm guessing you had posted about it. Mm-hmm. So we had just gotten a message from someone that said that they didn't feel like it was worth the extra money to pay for it, the $1,000, because you can get them for maybe $400 to $600 a per for like a decent one. And my rebuttal was, yes, maybe $600 for like a really nice one, but with maintenance that probably needs repairs, you're going to end up getting close to $1,000, especially if it's a beater one. You're going to spend at least $200 to $300 getting that thing into like good shape. And they said that they didn't see the features. But for me personally, I mean, if they have the same type of electronics, the same type of, if they're still like workhorses and they're $1,000 and they have newer technology and they're even better than what the old ones were, I think it's worth it to me.
Yeah, so Turntable Lab actually is taking pre-orders, I believe they're pre-orders. They're not actually up yet for the 1200s. And I saw someone did comment and ask, basically, are these made in Japan? And I'm like, the obvious answer to that is no, because then they would be, you know, exponentially more cost-wise. So obviously they're not being manufactured in Japan, which I understand why the ones in Japan, that the ones that are made in Japan are worth more. I believe they're heavier.
They're just more sought after.
Yeah, they're just more sought after. They're workhorses. Do we have one or two?
We have two made in Japan.
We have two made in Japan. And, you know, so I will, even though Andrew and I disagree about plenty of things on this subject, I will say that I do agree with him, especially if, you know, I'm not saying to get as your first pair of turntables if you're going to start playing out sort of thing. You know, stands are good for that. We always talked about this is always a subject on here with our guests and for us. But, you know, if you're really, I feel like, looking to invest, maybe don't get the first ones at the jump, because I feel like technologically, like, anytime you buy like the first edition of something, it's always like buggy, right? Or like there's always some type of potential problem.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to get it, I mean, if they offer a warranty, I suggest you get one. You never know what's going to happen. It's been a long time since they've manufactured Techniques. So I would suggest, you know, if you can wait, then just wait. But if you have to, then just get them. I mean, I think they're very similar to the PLX 1000s, which is the pioneer version of a Techniques. But it's from, I actually had said that on a post before, and I was like, what's the difference between this and a PLX 1000? They're all, that's a Pioneer, this is a Techniques, that's the difference. I'm like, well, it's the same company, because Pioneer owns Techniques. But I don't know. I don't know where they're going to be made. I mean, I know a lot of people that is a selling point for a lot of people, that they're going to be made in China, or made in Japan, or made in America, or wherever they're going to be made. It is a selling point, because $1,000 is a lot for a turntable, considering you can get like a high-end turntable for a lot less.
I'm tempted to pre-order one, and you can do the unboxing of it. Of it, Andrew.
Just one.
Yeah, just one. No, but really, I think that if you're looking to upgrade, and it's totally true, because I know people who have bought, you know, because obviously there's plenty out there in the wild, I guess you can say, but I see people marking them up all the time, and not just like the special edition ones, but I see people trying to sell some beater 1200s for a lot of money, and sometimes they sit there and sometimes they go, you know, because there's a sucker born every minute. So but I think it's a worthy investment if you just wanted a nice at-home setup, or you wanted something that you felt like, you know, because with the Techniques brand, it comes with the whole idea of like, it's a trusting brand, it's gonna last you, it's quality. So if you believe in that and you can get some type of warranty, I say why the heck not. And I don't think Turntable Lab ever carries anything that's like, you know, junky or whatever.
I don't think so. I mean, like I said, if you can afford it and you're looking to upgrade your tables already, I think they're more aimed towards professional DJs, like DJs who do it for a living, not your at home DJs. I mean, if you can afford that dope ass setup at home, by all means.
Yeah, I'm not paying your bills.
Yeah, I ain't paying your bills. But I mean, I'm just curious to see how they track with the records, because I'm sure they're more aimed at the Serato DJs. I don't know what kind of, I haven't read too much up on them. They just look cool, and I just know they have like different tone arms and stuff like that, just updated shit.
So, with that all being said, do you actually have a list for this episode?
I do have a list. Let me pull that up.
Look at unprepared Andrew.
I am prepared. I already took, you know.
Am prepared Andrew or unprepared?
I am prepared Andrew. So, the day I selected was this day. Oh, shit. Did I remember what
you
day?
You mean date, not day.
This date.
Because we know date. You selected this day.
May 25th, 1995.
Okay, I tell Andrew all
and
the time.
I don't care because I like it.
Just as an FYI, what do I tell you?
You know, you need to stop picking the 90s, but the whole thing about the
and the 80s. But
The good thing about the Billboard 100 and what changes throughout the day, throughout the year, is that the Billboard Top 100, Hot 100 changes constantly. So if I selected 1995 every day, every week we did it, the chances of the same number one song being there are slim. That the Hot 100 constantly changes. So I like playing the 90 songs as those songs that everyone, well, anybody that's our age knows. So that's, I need to change it up a little bit, but I like staying in stuff that I know.
So are you saying only people our age listen to this?
I mean, people that are younger might listen to this. I'd hope so. And I'd hope they email us at justkeepspinningpodcast@gmail.com and let us know.
Or if you're older, you can DM us on Just Keep Spinning Podcast at, just at Just Keep Spinning Podcast. At I got Just lost there.
On Instagram.
Yeah, and hold on, I got to call you out really quick, Andrew. Are you going to finally do the banner?
I am going to finally do the banner. I actually was...
For the Facebook page, because we have a Facebook page.
Yeah, but just... It's all through Drea's Facebook. I don't know how to get into it, so she's going to have to do all... I'm just going to do, like, the stuff that needs to be done, and then she can manage that. But before we started recording, well, we're recording a little late today is because I was working on getting the Skype calling all set up, so we'll be taking care of... We'll be getting Skype calls, interviews pretty soon here. I know we've been talking about that for almost a year because we're coming up on our year, but you know, it's hard to do things sometimes.
So when is our year?
It's coming up in June, so next month. I don't exactly know what day, but I will know. So this next episode might be a year because we've missed at least 10 to 15 episodes throughout last year.
Last year we didn't miss. We only missed one. We only missed a few last year.
We missed at least like 10 episodes this year. So yeah. This is about 43? No, so if it's 52, so we missed
shame on us.
Shame on us.
Just keep shaming people.
Yes. But, so, 1995, this day in music, Hot 100. Here we go. Number 10, Monica, Don't Take It Personal. Mm-hmm. Number 9, Bless the Union of Souls, I Believe. Number 8, TLC, Red Light Special, which is probably one of my favorite TLC songs.
I think, who is your favorite, T-Boz, Left Eye, or Chili?
I'm going to have to go with T-Boz because her voice was
He was about to
so
say
dreamy.
Chili, and I say, you're going to say Chili, and then he's like, oh, T-Boz.
No. Mm-hmm. I like Left Eye, too. I wasn't a big fan of Chili.
What? Why didn't you like Chili?
I'm just joking. They all had really good... They all had their...
They were all hot and sexy,
they
so I loved
hot,
them all.
Hot, sexy women. Number 7, I don't know, Dion Ferris. Number 6, Nikki French, Total Eclipse of the... I don't know what...
Nikki French? That's not Nikki French. Total Eclipse of the Heart?
Yeah, that's Nikki French. N-I-C-K-I French. That's,
okay, cool. Do you think they're related to Julian?
Maybe. Anita Howard, Freak Like Me.
Okay, I love that song.
Sorry, I sneezed. Number 4, I'll Be There For You, You're All I Need to Get By. Method Man featuring Mary J. Blige. There's something off the hook over there.
I'm not sure. Hold on. Sorry.
Sorry.
For the interruption. Go on.
Number 3, Boyz II Men, Water Runs Dry. Number 2, Have you ever really loved a woman, Bryan Adams?
I hated that song. I think my mom liked it, and I remember the video, and it was so boring, and I was just like... This is just so cheesy. It was too cheesy for me.
And what's your... Do you have a guess for a summer anthem?
1995 makes me think of Selena.
It's not Selena.
I know it's not Selena. I know that. Give me a hint. Is it a man?
It is a male artist.
Okay, 1995. You said Bryan Adams is number two with that cheesy ass song. Mm-hmm. Number three was what?
I believe
Mary J. Blige and Boyz II Men. Boyz II Men, Water Runs Dry. And it's a man? Is this what genre?
I can't tell you.
Oh my God, I'm not going to guess it. What genre?
I guess you can say it's like hip hop and R&B.
You guess?
Yeah.
Okay. Just tell me because I'm not going to guess at all. Is it? No, go on.
No, you need to guess.
I don't have a guess.
It's
California Love. No, I'm just kidding. What is it?
No, that's 1996. Montel Jordan.
Oh, gosh. This is how we do it. Oh, my gosh.
Yes. That was a summer anthem. I remember that anthem of that summer.
When that song was popping, I lived because I moved tons. I remember exactly where I lived because I remember it was off of Osborne and like, what is it? Like 73rd or something, 73rd Avenue or something around there. And we lived in like a little condo and I just remember we got robbed. But
Jesus Christ.
I've led a tragic life, guys. No, but we got robbed twice there, actually, not just once. And one time was by a family member. But
oh my God.
But I remember that's what that song makes me think of. But is one of those songs that I don't ever have to hear again in my life, and I'll be happy because I've heard it a million and one times that I know it's not a bad song, but it's just so like, it kind of gives me a headache.
Well, unfortunately for you, it's the number one song in 1995 on this day.
Well, congrats to Montel Jordan.
Yeah, his one hit wonder.
One hit wonder. Okay. So, Andrew, do you happen to know what the number one song this week on the Hot Billboard 100 is?
I believe it is Lil Nas.
Lil Nas X.
Featuring Billy Ray Cyrus. I forget the song.
Old Town Road. I forgot the song.
Remix.
Yes, the remix. So it's currently been at number one for actually 8 weeks, which is pretty impressive, I feel like, a little bit. Obviously, I think the song that still holds the longest number one, I might be wrong, but I think it's one Sweet Day by Mariah Carey, almost in One Fine Day, which is the total opposite of what's going on in that song. One Sweet Day by Mariah Carey, which makes me think of middle school. And I remember coming home from a field trip and being on the bus and all of us singing that damn song. But so the number one song is Old Town Road. So some of the controversy that's been surrounding that song is basically how the song has both, you know, like trap elements and country elements to it.
Hold on, I got the answer. Right Here, We Belong Together, the Black Eyed Peas, I Got a Feeling, and then Mark Ronson featuring Bruno Mars, Uptown Funk, all spent 14 weeks.
Those are, but I thought, how long was One Sweet Day? See, damn it, I'm seeing One Fine Day.
I don't know. I can look.
I'm pretty sure that's...
Oh, actually, never mind. Scratch that. One Sweet Day, Mariah Carey, 16 weeks.
Yes, but at the number one of the Hot 100.
Yes, and Despacito was tied it.
Yes, Despacito, which I can understand that because it had crossover appeal, basically. So it was pulling from different audiences. So the controversy, like I said, is the fact that Billboard did not allow for Old Town Road to chart on the country charts. It has only charted, I believe, on the R&B chart and then the regular Hot 100 chart. So what this episode we're going to do is I did a lot of research and it took a lot of time. So that's why this episode was recorded a little bit late, so that I delved a little bit into the history of Billboard and the history of actually the R&B chart and how it came to be and why things are the way they are, because I felt like it was really important because I really wanted to understand, because there obviously with sometimes there are basically they discriminate because of someone's race. There's racial undertones there as to why they won't let someone chart one place or another. And another modern example, which is funny because we already talked about this person on the last episode, was Beyonce. So with Beyonce, she had this song called Daddy Lessons on Lemonade. And that song, though, that one, there was no doubt about it. Like, I can see the Lil Nas X, why some people are like, I don't feel like it's country enough. But that one is for sure 100% to me just through and through like a traditional country song. And it kind of just was not accepted on country radio. It was not accepted on the country charts. The Dixie Chicks actually tried to kind of use their influence, I guess you can say, to see if it can gain some traction in that world. And they had Beyonce on the Country Music Awards with them, and they performed Daddy Lessons with Beyonce. I don't believe it ever actually charted on the country charts or anything like that, never gained traction. So that's kind of an interesting, I guess, tidbit there, and something that is also still recent that we can reference to. So I'm going to, like I said, bear with me because I do have a lot of notes and I'm going to try to get through them as nicely as possible because I did research, and I like researching things and I always get curious and I'm always reading up on different stuff and I like to share information. So I felt like this was one of the perfect topics for this episode. I actually have a quick question for you before I keep going on. Do you actually know how sales and stuff are, or things are tabulated for the Billboard chart?
I do not.
You don't? Okay, can you take a guess?
Well, I'm guessing it originally was on record sales or like single records that were being sold at the time, or CDs or tapes. But now it's probably off of single streams.
Okay, so I think that we all know what Billboard actually is. We use it on here, obviously, because Andrew has his segment that he does with the countdown. But what it does, it tracks and tells us what the top songs and albums are on a given week. And, you know, they do the tally at the end of the year, and it tells you, they have an end of the year chart every year as well. And it's on a general basis or in a more niche way that tracks a particular audience. So I think that one of the biggest misconceptions is that it strictly only tracks a genre, when sometimes some charts are actually tracking audiences and not genres of music. So the Hot 100 is for singles and the Hot 200 is for albums. I can't remember exactly why it's not like Hot 100 singles and Hot 100 albums, but for whatever reason, just to distinguish between the two, and so everybody knows, the Hot 100 is for singles that are released and the Hot 200 is for albums that are released. So the way that before July 2015, it used to be a Monday through Sunday cycle, I guess you can say. And since July 2015, it's actually a Friday through Thursday cycle. I don't know why they changed it. Why do you think that is? Like, why do you think the switch up?
Excuse me. I think it's because of the weekend. So Friday and Saturday are going to be two big days for any type of stream, because that's going to be like the days off, and most people have the weekend offs, and kids have the weekend off, so that way they can actually, you know, be out there supporting the artist and or listening to their music in their cars and outside, barbecuing, dancing around like a fool in your room, whatever it may be.
So the radio streams used, I don't want to say streams, but the radio tabulations, I guess, used to be calculated from Wednesday to Tuesday, but now they're through Monday through Sunday. And the charts are released every Tuesday. So what Billboard did initially was, all the way back on January 4th, 1936, they published this thing called Hit Parade, and it was basically the most popular recordings. So the Hit Parade was basically a list of compositions, not records. So when I'm saying compositions, it wasn't actually like, this is, I don't know, Old Town Road by Lil Nas X. It would be basically like, there's this song called Old Town Road, and people were purchasing the compositions and they were tabulating it by songs, not like this specific song by this specific artist, which I thought was kind of interesting. Don't you think that's kind of weird when you think about it in that sense? Like, it could be like the number one seller is Hotline Bling by Drake. So not only are they tabulating that specific song that was made by Drake, but any other cover of Hotline Bling would be tabulated into the record. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I do. Sorry. I was yawning again. I have the yawns right now. But yeah. I mean, composition basically means like the song and how it was composed and written. So, I mean, it makes sense about why they would do that. But, I mean, nowadays you really don't need to.
Yeah. So, like I said, the hits were recorded by several different artists. Each record company promoted their version through purchased airtime on radio stations. So, originally, the music compositions were published because people were encouraged to make several versions of a song. And, like I said, a song, not an artist. So, and this was before the concept of the cover came into play. Like, a cover song really wasn't a thing back then. I think that didn't come more into play until, I think, like, the actual concept of, like, what a cover song is until, like, the 60s. But before, it was like, here, someone composed a song and then you recorded it and everybody made their own version. And that's why sometimes things were hits regionally, like a specific one. But like I said, it tabulated compositions, not actual song and artists. So the first music popularity chart was released on July 1940. There were several charts throughout time, and they were eventually combined to make the Hot 100 by 1958. So currently, the way it tabulates it now is by single sales, so actual physical sales, hard copies, radio airplays, digital downloads, and streaming from YouTube and other sites. So in 2005 is when the digital downloads were implemented and counted onto the Billboard Hot 100 chart, and that basically changed the game a bit because it allowed a song to chart without actually being played on a radio.
So that's about the year that Napster and stuff like that came around. Like,
no way, 2005.
Well, that's when like it was bit like that's when like the big illegal wasn't it that the dude homeboy
2005. Mimi was born in 2005.
Dude, I'm just a little lost. Wait, so no, but that's when YouTube was at its like birth still.
Yeah, so, but that's not counting YouTube. I mean, digital downloads. We're not talking about streaming. We're specifically talking about digital downloads from legitimate websites like iTunes. Amazon MP3. Yeah, stuff like that. So that's how that came into play into 2005. So
I think I'm trying to remember other MP3.
Rhapsody.
I would say Rhapsody and iTunes are the only two that I can remember.
Amazon MP3, no?
I don't think Amazon MP3 was around. I don't know. I just downloaded everything illegally back then.
Yeah, so you have to remember, too, I would say around, you know, pirating music has always been a thing for the longest time, whether it's back in the day there was bootleg cassettes and stuff like that. But as far as in the digital era, it was always a thing, but I would say it didn't, like, illegally downloading music probably didn't go mainstream until probably about, like, 2004, 2005. Because other than before then, it was still kind of like you had to have a connect or know someone to get stuff illegally. Like, someone had to have access to it, whether it was, like, a computer. Because, I mean, people had computers in the early 2000s in their homes, but I think it was just not, people weren't savvy enough on knowing how to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking about the sharing, the peer-to-peers that I used to use, LimeWire, Kazaa. I can't remember any other ones.
Is it Kazaa or Kazaa?
That was Kazaa. But LimeWire was the big one. Everyone used LimeWire before like Napster and stuff like that, after Napster and stuff like that.
Well, actually, one of the OG services was eDonkey Emule.
Yeah, that was all torrents, though.
Yeah, but that was like, because my brother was a mega nerd, so he was always like ahead of the curve with certain things. So on July 31st, 2007, digital stream, so how you were saying talking about streams. So on July 31st, 2007, that's when digital streams were able to be counted, but they were only counted from Yahoo and AOL, which is not much of an impact because who the hell was listening and streaming music on Yahoo and AOL? Maybe if you're a middle schooler in 2007, but it only accounted for about 5% of the points. So it wasn't a huge impact overall. In October 2012, it included basically, in October 2012, the rap and hip-hop and the country rock and Latin charts, so like more of the specific, what you would think as the genre charts, they still were strictly, up until then, they were all radio formats. So the way that the Hot 100, or not Hot 100, but like the top songs on those specific charts, the country, the Latin, and the rap hip-hop chart, those were all strictly through radio airplay. And we're not influenced by downloads or streams or anything like that. And then probably one of the biggest game changers was in February 2013, they started counting YouTube hits. So to me, that's interesting because I know that a lot of fans, when they want their number one or their fave or whatever they want to call them, who they're so-called standing for, they basically will buy services so that it can keep looping. It'll play the video all the way through, and it's like essentially F5-ing, like refreshing the video so that it can constantly get plays, so that they can brag and say that their favorite has the most listened to, most streamed, what'd you say, like no streamed or watched video on YouTube. So to me, that is very manipulated. And I know there was other ways that people manipulated numbers and stuff before, but I think that's also has to be taken into consideration with some things, especially with a lot of these newer records that come into play. So like I said, all those, so Billboard is accounting for, like we said, digital downloads, digital streams, and it's not only affecting the Hot 100, but it's affecting the specific charts for every genre, and then also, like I said, YouTube streams. So that definitely, I think, changes the game up and changes things there. So each chart is actually has a chart manager. So it's not like there's one person at Billboard controlling all the charts. Each chart has someone assigned and designated to manage that chart. So what's interesting too, and what's also significant that I did want to note here, was that certain songs that did not chart on the Hot 100 were Loveful by the Cardigans. You know that song, right?
No, I do not know that song.
Yes, you do. Love me, oh, say. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm like, you're making me sing karaoke. No, you're not one to. Let's see. What also? Do you know that song Torn by Natalie Imbruglia?
I do not know that song either.
Okay, so I'm sure you know it. But that song, basically, it didn't even hit the top 10. It peaked at number 42 on the Hot 100, but it was actually a really huge hit. You know that song by Goo Goo Dolls, Iris? It was to the City of Angels soundtrack.
Yeah, I remember that stupid song.
That song only made it to number 9, but didn't it feel like it was number 1?
Yeah, I feel like it was everywhere during that time period.
And then certain songs that didn't even, like I said, chart in the top on the Hot 100 were Fly by Sugar Ray, which was everywhere, Don't Speak by No Doubt, and that song that, How Bizarre, How Bizarre. Doom, 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 doom. Yeah. Doom, doom, doom. So those songs didn't even make it to the top of the Hot 100, but if you're listening and you're around our age or a little bit older, I'm sure you remember each of those songs, and it's kind of weird to think that those songs didn't even reach number one on the most popular chart in the country, when it seems like everybody knows those songs, that they were popular songs of their time. But at the time, you know, it's just certain rules were in play that didn't allow them to make it to the top of the chart or to chart at all. So let's go ahead and get back to this. As we were talking about before, the whole thing with Lil Nas X and why it's not on the country chart. So what's also interesting is Uptown Funk, which Andrew did mention earlier, which is obviously by Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars, did not chart at all on the R&B chart.
Really?
Yeah. It did not chart at all.
It's the, well,
so
it's more pop music, to be completely honest.
So it charted at number one for 19 weeks. And it was from December 2014 through April 2015. But it, like I said, it never charted on the actual R&B chart. So do you think that it should have been on the got represented on the R&B chart? Yes or no?
No. Because it's hard to say that that's R&B in comparison to what traditionally R&B is. And the reason why is because although that does have like horns and like obviously a funky beat, it was made as a pop song. It is a pop song. Bruno Mars is a pop artist. As much as, you know, he's not saying he's a bad artist, not saying he doesn't make good music, but he's a pop artist. He's a very, very good pop artist. And, you know, and him being the front man, obviously, it's not his song, it's just featuring him. It makes it a pop song to me.
Okay, well, let's go backwards again, back to Old Town Road. So did you know that this is Trent Reznor's first number one? Because they have a Nine Inch Nails sample in that song.
They have a which Nine Inch Nails sample do they use?
It's an instrumental, I believe, and I can't remember right now at the top of my head.
No, I did not know that.
But what some people are arguing is that basically, so let's back it up again to Uptown Funk. So Drake was allowed to have a Hot Blind Bling on both the R&B and the Hot 100 chart. But was there very, very many R&B elements to Hotline Bling?
Well, see, that's kind of the catch. So, Uptown Funk was obviously like a upbeat, funky song. So, Hotline Bling in particular. Wait,
you think that Uptown Funk was funky? No, I'm just kidding.
No, I never would have thought. Hotline Bling had R&B, a lot more R&B elements to it that made it more of an R&B song. And obviously, Drake is a pop artist, so he is obviously going to be on the Hot 100. So that fits the script, even though it's... Because there's no funk charts. There's no soul charts anymore. There's nothing like that. So where are they going to lump those in? You can't lump it into R&B because R&B is just different. It's just traditionally a different type of genre, in my opinion.
Okay, so when Old Town Road started gaining a lot of traction, because the actual official song, the original mix of the song is only 1 minute and 53 seconds long. So the official remix with Billy Ray, not the music video one on YouTube, but the song itself stands at 2 minutes and 37 seconds. So basically what happened was Old Town Road came out, and when it started getting a lot of traction, it actually did start charting on the country charts. It really did. However, Billboard was like, uh-uh. So, you know, like I said, each chart is managed by an individual person. So whoever the chart manager is, I'm sure they have connects in the industry and they know people. They got where they are for a reason. So basically, a lot of the people in Nashville, the Nashville scene, which is obviously most of the country music that is made here in the United States, it's all centered and based around Nashville. It's like its own mini industry. It's a strong industry, but it's in the, how do you say, like, in the ecosystem of the music industry, but it's its own thing, Nashville. You know, it lives in its own little world. So a lot of the gatekeepers in Nashville were basically like, we don't think this is a country song. We don't think that it should chart. And they're basically being snobs, and they're just like, we don't like it. It's not good enough for us. We don't want to call this country. So then Billboard actually released a statement, and they said Old Town Road incorporates references to country and cowboy imagery, but does not embrace enough elements of today's country music to chart on the current version of the chart.
Well, yeah.
Okay, have you ever heard of that song? There's a song by BB Rexha, and it has Florida Georgia Line. I'm sorry, I'm not well versed on this band. I hear it on the radio. It's like, if it's meant to be, then yeah. It'll be. Okay, that got a chart on the country chart and on the Hot 100.
See, I thought that was just a country song. I don't know. Was there a pop artist? Is she a pop artist?
BB Rexha? Yeah.
So if she was featured, or if she was at her artist and they were the feature, I didn't even know, because I thought it was just a normal old country song.
Okay, so that's the thing. So Billy Ray basically was a fan of Old Town Road, the song, and he was like, hey, you know, he contacted him, his people or whatever it was, and he was like, I want to jump on this with you, and I want to help you out here. Because he felt like, you know, with him, he's like, you know, I feel like it's, you know, yeah, it's trap, but it's country too. And change sounds, you know, change and evolve, and, you know, we need to get with the times here. So he felt like kind of throwing Lil Nas X an assist there and jumping on it. But it didn't make it on the country chart. But it's still, like I said, it's right now currently still number one at 8 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, listening to the song, because we were listening to it beforehand, before we started recording, there's a lot of country elements in that song. The only thing that is not country in that song is the beat, because it obviously has a trap beat on it, which I actually think...
But it's still country-esque.
Yeah, it's very, very country, the way the contents, the way it's sung. It's just... And so I understand why they think that, but in reality, you know, like Drea said, you need to get with the times and understand that, you know, that type of music has to evolve a little bit, and you know, I just don't think they're ready for, you know, trap country music yet.
Okay, so like I said, in 1936, that's when the Music Hit Parade was created, which gathered and tabulated the most popular compositions at the time. So then in 1942, the Harlem Hit Parade was created. And then Billboard created, this is super cringy, but from 1945 to 1949, there was an actual chart called Race Records.
Yeesh.
Yeah.
What the fuck were you thinking?
So then in the 50s, there was the official rhythm and blues chart, not just R&B, but rhythm and blues. And then from 73 to 82, there's the Hot Soul Singles. And then in 1982, they created the Hot Black Singles. So there was a lot of controversy with that. But the interesting tidbit here is that in November 1963, basically in November 1963, they had the rhythm and blues chart, and they published it, and the number one song at that time in November 1963 and for that chart was Sugar Shack by the Fireballs and Jimmy Gilmore. Do you remember that song that I played for yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you think about that song?
I thought it was a cool song.
No, but I mean, it was on the rhythm and blues chart. Like, but think about the standards for back then. Do you think it belonged on there? Yes or no?
I mean, I think for the time, I mean, it was rhythm and blues back then. It fits on that chart because of the time. It was a song of the time. It was actually when R&B was actually rhythm and blues, which was like rhythm guitar with blues elements. Now it's not that at all. I don't know how that transitioned, but it just did.
Okay, so like I said, in November 1963, the number one song on the rhythm and blues chart was that song Sugar Shack. So you can go listen to it. Like I said, I can see why it was on there, especially back then. However, after that, the rhythm and blues chart, the Billboard one, went on hiatus for 14 months and was not published nor tracked. No one knows why. There's been no explanation or anything, and if there was, it's just been lost to time. But the chart came back in late January 1965, and it was the Hot Rhythm and Blues chart. And then there was a press release at that time, basically, that said, this is the exact words. It says, kudos to all disc jockeys, program directors, retail outlets for their splendid cooperation and helping kick off the new R&B page. It is quite evident and has been for some years that the people engaged in all areas of R&B programming and retailing are solid and cooperative merchandisers. The rapport between R&B radio and retail outlets and the energies expended by both to build the R&B field is a page that could well be inserted into many other areas of the record business. AKA, they wanted to basically track what black audiences were buying and consuming. Because what was happening before was retailer and radio stations, basically, if they thought something sounded like R&B, like it was just, they were just calling the shots. And most of the people that owned the majority of these stores and these radio stations were white. So you know, and this was before the Civil Rights Act and all that other stuff, because this was during the 50s and 60s. So basically, they were controlling the charts and calling the shots. So they revamped the formula and they placed limits on what could actually be on the chart. So I thought that was really, I don't know, it's just interesting the way that they decided to do that. So it was just making sure, basically they were just trying to make sure too that they're giving credit to true R&B and not just songs that happen to have an R&B element to them. So they wanted to cover true R&B artists, and they were tracking more black-owned stores and things like that. So like I said, they were trying to track a clientele or an audience versus tracking an actual genre. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I feel you.
So that's why the Hot 100 in the past was always much different than the quote-unquote genre charts, because it wasn't, basically they weren't one of the same. Because now when you look a lot of times at the Hot 100 and you look at certain charts, it's like they're identical. And that's why, because before they used to be separated because the standards were different, but now the standards are the same for all charts, therefore everything's just matching up and there's no differentiation. So when that chart came back in 1965, can you guess what the number one song on the R&B chart was?
I have no idea, because I wasn't even born yet.
My Girl by the Temptations.
Oh, that fits. That's fitting.
So My Girl by the Temptations was number one on the R&B chart, but not on the Hot 100 chart. It wasn't even in the top 10. It ended up hitting number one on the Hot 100, I believe, months later. It was like in March. So the chart was relaunched back in... when it was, and it took months later for it to be on there. So there was instances basically though of R&B songs that were on the Hot 100 chart but not the R&B chart, which a significant song was Shirley Ellis, The Name Game. It was number 3 on the Hot 100 and it was number 6 on the R&B and peaked at number 4. So it charted higher on the Hot 100 than it did the R&B chart. So there's plenty of R&B hits that were never, ever pop hits. So from the 70s, basically from 71, 72, there was plenty of songs that were number one on the R&B chart, but never even made it in the top 20 of the Hot 100 at all. So the end of the 70s, though, there was groups like P-Funk and Teddy Pendergrass and stuff like that, and they had really great, strong R&B careers, and they positioned low on the Hot 100 chart, if they did at all, but they were always high on the R&B charts. So they didn't get as much push by labels and things like that, but they still were able to have really fruitful and good careers because they had their own audience that they were that their, you know, the core base of fans that they were playing to that kept them afloat. So you know, by when the 80s came around, there was Kool & the Gang and they had a number one hit in the 80s. However, they were already an established group because they had plenty of R&B chart hits in the 70s. But a lot of people weren't as privy to that because they didn't really get turned on to them until the 80s. So, and payola at that time, I also didn't really affect the R&B charts. They more affected like the country charts or just the regular pop music charts because of the fact that a lot of labels just felt like it wasn't, it's really sad, but the way they saw it was like, oh, it's not worth investing in payola for black artists or like R&B artists. So they only invested payola in very specific artists that they felt like would be able to appeal to a quote-unquote broader audience. So that's a little bit of the history of the Billboard chart and of the R&B chart. So with that being said, like I said, what do you think about Old Town Road?
I think it's the closest thing. It's really, really close to a country song. It has a lot, again... The only element that's different than a traditional country song is the beat, and because it has a trap beat over it. But I think it's something new and refreshing, and so it makes the song, it makes the genre more interesting and more appealing to a broader audience, which is something that they're trying to accomplish, to be completely honest. I mean, I'm not going to say that a lot of people who are listening to Old Country Road are going to buy a Garth Brooks album.
Old Town Road,
excuse me.
Old Country Buffet. I think that's
all over the place. I'm not going to say they're going to go buy the Garth Brooks record or anything like that.
But you don't know that.
But it might turn somebody on to it and be interested in trying to find different country music that has different elements into it that isn't a traditional country music.
Well, see, that's what I always found interesting. It goes back to the argument that I usually always have with people, because I'll meet people like, okay, Aaliyah was a pop R&B artist, but she didn't really chart much on the general chart at all. She mostly charted on the R&B chart. So I think her two big crossover hits were Try Again, which is on the Romeo Must Die soundtrack, which was obviously much later in her career, and Are You That Somebody, which is part of the Dr. Dolittle soundtrack, which was, well, I wouldn't say it's late. It was, you know, another chapter. It wasn't the beginning of the chapter of her career. So it's always really interesting to me when I meet people from certain backgrounds and they claim that they've been Aaliyah fans since day one, which to me, it doesn't matter. As long as you like the music, who cares how long you've been a fan or whatever? That's totally irrelevant. But, and the same with Selena, I'll meet people that, obviously, Selena was super niche. Like, come on now. The majority of her music was in Spanish. So she was a really big deal. And, you know, Texas, Arizona, California, southwestern part of the U.S. There's even people, you know, of Spanish-speaking languages that didn't even know Selena up in New York, because that just wasn't their flavor of music. Obviously, Spanish-speaking music was a thing, but it was, you know, Selena specifically was Tejano music. So it was very, very niche. So anyhow, basically, Selena never charted on the main chart until she passed away. So it's just interesting to me how people try to rewrite history when the charts used to be, I guess, tabulated one way, and now they're just all over the damn place and it's hard to tell. So they said kind of the problem, though, with the way the charts are tabulated now is that there's just no differentiation and there's no tracking audience, because it's only tracking the consumption habits of one type of audience and not everybody in general. So I do wish that they would kind of fix the charting, because I do feel like it's inaccurate, and I'm not old but maybe I am, because that's how I feel sometimes when I look at the charts and I'm like, I don't know who these people are, I don't know who this is. And I try to, like I said, I always give something at least one try. I don't care what genre it is, I'll listen to it. And I also want to say that there's a song out there called, they call it the Old Town Road remix, and it's called Old Town Ho. It's worth a listen, but do not listen with your kids in the car.
It was rough. It was very funny, but it was rough.
It's by a rapper. I believe her name is Cupcake. But yeah, it was interesting. It's pretty explicit, I guess you can say. But I don't know. I feel like they should just let it on the damn country chart. That's how I personally feel. I guess I get why it wasn't. I mean, Uptown Funk, like I said, the only reason why they didn't let it chart on the R&B chart is because someone just decided they just didn't want to put it on there. And that's kind of the issue, too, is like you have one person making all the decisions, and who knows the background of that person, who knows how long they've been in the industry. And then it becomes this whole thing, too, of like doing favors for people. Because I remember when Britney Spears released Blackout, they were tabulating and she should have gone to number one, but they ended up changing the rules so that the Eagles could go number one because they reissued some stupid box set. And I will go out on a limb, I don't care, I'll say I don't give a shit about the Eagles. I think they suck.
Yeah, they're not the best. They're not horrible, but
they're suck. Better than me, but that's not saying much.
That's not saying much. Maybe it's just because we're just not into classic rock. I mean, we don't hate on classic rock in this house.
No disrespect.
No disrespect to any Eagles fans out there, but the band you like isn't that great.
But like I said, so it's always fishy because so many things, too, are just straight up PR, like magazine covers and things like that. So I think number ones for artists are still valid. And there's still something to celebrate because it takes a lot of hard work to get there. But I do kind of not look at them with the same regard as I used to. It just doesn't feel the same to me.
Yeah, I mean, they already have plaques made for them, like the day they released their damn freaking for streamings in like the next day. So
what do you mean?
Like DJ Khaled always has a plaque, like within like 2 days of like, oh, I've already hit like 10 bazillion fucking streams on
Do you know why?
I don't know.
Because he the best.
I know, but so, like, it just takes the excitement away to, from, even if you were into, like, the chart, like, oh, what's going to chart this week? It takes away the excitement because it's instant gratification nowadays. They've already got their charts. They already got their plaques. They already got everything. I've already hit a bazillion fucking things on streams. A lot of, you know, like we had said before, who knows how many of those streams are actually real and how many were bot or how many were just bots in general. Because, you know, it's not as genuine as it used to be. Technology is great, but it's actually, I feel like it's taken back for musically. I think it's taken back the music industry back a little bit.
I mean, I think it, as we've said before, part of the problem is the music industry didn't want to address the whole digital download sales and all that other stuff too much. And that's why they're so behind and they're just taking such a big hit. I do believe in paying people for their labor creatively and things like that, but obviously, and there was this big hoopla in the early 2000s, late 90s, where people were paying, like, you know, over $20-something for a CD, which I pay that for a record, but at the time people were like, this is just a piece of basically plastic. And they just felt like it wasn't as personal, like a thing like a record or even something as like a cassette. So it just became this, what at the time people thought was like this impersonal connection to music. But, you know, little did we know, like I said, that now we don't even download music. We just stream it.
Yeah, I mean, but vinyl sales have gone up significantly because people actually feel the connection with the purchasing and having a hard copy of music, and they don't want a CD. They don't want, obviously, they don't make sense for most of these artists anymore, but a lot of them they're producing vinyl records. So, you know, kudos to them. Oh, something I did forget that I mentioned the last thing we recorded, that bad one, into this one. Garth Brooks. I had mentioned him a little earlier.
Oh, yeah.
He has a box set coming out, and he sold over 1 million pre-orders for his box set. Like, set a fucking record or some shit. And this, mind you, these are pre-orders. People physically went and pre-ordered this box set worldwide. But it's like, you know, it's a country artist releasing a box set, and over a million copies have been pre-ordered, and I think that's pretty freaking awesome. I really don't care, you know, I'm not going to go pre-order a Garth Brooks box set, but I think that, you know, it speaks volumes of, like, the direction things are going for physical media, and it makes me happy because it doesn't look like it's not just a hipster trend, as a lot of people say now it is.
I think, though, like, do you honestly want to know my opinion about why supposedly he was able to do 1 million pre-orders?
Sure.
Because I think it's because he has friends in low places. I'm corny, guys. I don't care.
I love that song, too.
I love that song. You know who doesn't mean karaoke of that song?
Who?
Phil.
I mean, shout out to Phil.
Yeah, Phil, who'll never listen to this.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I don't know. It's just weird, I guess, like, at the chart, and people chase number ones. Like I said, there's a whole thing of the people with their faves, and they'll sit there, and I don't know who the hell has time to do that. I'm sure it's like middle schoolers and maybe high schoolers that sit there and refresh and get the little bots to have the app so it can keep refreshing and doing the plays on YouTube. And I don't think that those are irrelevant, because they are completely relevant ways to listen to music. There's no wrong way to consume or listen to music. It's just kind of like, though, I wish there was some distinction or footnote made on the charts so that it can basically say, like, this was the era of, you know, the digital, this is when the digital era began, and this is before the digital era, because to me that's significant. And a lot of people are talking so mad trash about this song because, like I said, it is only, the original mix is 1 minute and 53 seconds, so it has a lot of really good re-listenability, because you hear it and you're like, huh, I didn't get enough of it. It was, like, clever, it was you know, catchy, so it has a lot of replayability factor in it, so it's easier to just keep streaming it over and over and over because you feel like you're not getting enough of it. And some people say, oh, it's going to start this trend of songs being short, which it might. That's already been happening. People used to talk so much trash in the era of like the mid-2000s because of the whole, they would say, you know, there was ringtone rap. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
So, and we survived that and we're here now, so we'll be fine. And there's always interesting music out there that's not in the mainstream, but there's so many great things out there for you to pick up new music, talk to people, connect with people, whether it's online. I always say try to connect in person. There's just so much good music out there, no matter the genre. And people say rock's dead right now, but you know, there's plenty of rock bands that have still been going, that are going strong, and new ones coming out. And it's just about being open-minded, because I know, I will say, Andrew, that I feel like sometimes you're closed-minded to a lot of rock music now.
Yeah, I just don't. I'm not. I feel like it all sounds the same. I feel like it all has synthesizers and all has some type of, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Auto-tune element. And it just, I don't know. I mean, or it's like just a whole bunch of people hitting soundboards to make music. And I think rock music has lost its luster in the sense of, like, no one's actually creating rock music. Everyone's creating studio rock music, and there's not talented artists. There's not as talented artists or musicians anymore now. It's just I'm going to play three chords, and I have a whole bunch of effects, and I'm going to, or this guy's going to be over here hitting a whole bunch of keys on a pad to make the music, or I'm going to have a keyboard.
You mean it sounds formulaic and sanitary?
It's just not raw, and it's just not what it used to be.
But maybe you're just out of touch, honestly.
Maybe, but maybe I just don't want to be in touch.
Oh, just stop, mister. I listen to oldies all day. Come on.
I don't listen to oldies all day. Us podcasts all
day. Oh gosh, you know what I'm saying. But real quick before I wrap it up here, I do want to say that the original video for Old Town Road, before Lil Nas X made his, even before the Billy Ray, before the one by himself, it actually was cut scenes of Red Dead Redemption 2. So, like, he put little scenes together. So some people are saying that actually and I can't find that video anymore though. But some people were saying that the actual influence of that song is Red Dead Redemption 2.
Which is a game I still haven't played, but we talked about it with Ken.
But it would be so awesome if that was true, because, I don't know, that would just be amazing. And if that was true, like, he should have totally tried to license it, because I think that he would have made a lot of money doing that.
I think he would have made, I think he's already making a lot of money.
Yeah, I think he does too, because he gave Billy Ray Cyrus a Maserati.
Must be nice.
Yes, must be nice. So, with that being said, what do you guys think? Do you guys think it should be able to chart on the country charts? Which it's not going to if they haven't let it on there by now, honestly, because then Billboard will just look hypocritical. Like, why do you guys put it on the charts now that Billy Ray's on there? Because then it obviously is racial. Do you think it's a racialized thing? Do you think it's because they have recalibrated the way they tabulate charts and things like that? Let us know. You can email us at justkeepspinningpodcast@gmail.com, or you can DM us on Instagram at Just Keep Spinning Podcast. Like I said, our Facebook page is up, so you can like it. And I'm going to be putting the pressure on Andrew to finish that banner this week to get everything completed, so it can be nice. And if you want, you can message us on there or whatever floats your boat. Again, thank you so much to the email that received, the listener email. We really appreciated that. It really helped us push along to let us know that what we're doing, I wouldn't want to say it's important or it's making a difference. I feel like that's a little too, like, a little too strong. But that people are out there and that they're feeling the product that we're giving them. And thank you so much to all the likes and the messages. And please subscribe, rate, and review. We're on iTunes, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Is it called Apple Podcasts, right?
Yeah, purple icon.
Spotify, Stitcher, pretty much anywhere a podcast is available, we're on there. If not, please let us know. And come see us at Ground Control. We play every 2 weeks. We don't play this weekend, but we play the following weekend.
Yeah, I'll be making a flyer for our June dates that you can catch us at Ground Control. We're always, obviously, we're trying to expand out a little bit more, but, you know, we're busy with everything else we're doing. So, you know, we're going to be committed to Ground Control solely right now.
Yeah, and sorry if I sound a little, like, jumpy or weird. I feel really rusty, and I feel really weird, like, coming back to doing this. It hasn't even been that long, and I really do enjoy doing this. It just feels weird to be so away. Even though, like, we don't talk to anybody, it's, like, us talking to each other. But I feel like when we're consistent with it, I feel more comfortable. And right now, I just feel so odd. Like, who wants to listen to me? Who wants to hear what I have to say? Or why am I, you know, doing this? Because nobody cares. I feel like that all the time. But, you know, like I said, each listen and any feedback that we receive, we really appreciate it. And don't forget to don't stop digging and just keep spinning.
Thanks, guys. Hit stop button. Stop. Don't hit pause.